Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The biggest battle over unionization in decades is now on in Washington. The issue, the card check bill just introduced in Congress that would allow workers to unionize without a secret ballot and would force companies to negotiate quickly with those unions or face government intervention. Armies of advocates for and against are now in full gear. A tiny swing vote in the U.S. Senate is poised to decide the issue. This hour, On Point Labor, Business, and Card Check. You can join the conversation. Which side are you lining up on, stronger unions or status quo? Have you seen problems with the way it works now? At this economic moment, does America need a union surge? Would Card Check bring it? We will hear in a moment from two of the biggest players in the battle, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO. But first, joining me from New York City is Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace reporter for The New York Times. His book is The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Workers, just out in paperback. Steve, great to have you back with us.
Hi, nice to be here, Tom. Great to be back.
What changes would this legislation make in the way American workers can and cannot unionize their workplaces?
This legislation would make the biggest changes in the nation's labor law since 1935, when the great National Labor Relations Act was first passed. And it would make essentially two big changes, Tom. One, it would make it far easier for workers to unionize by letting workers, by giving workers union recognition as soon as a majority of workers at a workplace sign cards saying they want a union.
Okay.
Right now, companies, managers can insist on a prolonged campaign and a secret ballot election.
So card check means you get a majority, a simple majority, who sign cards that say we want a union, and they've got a union?
As soon as the National Labor Relations Board certifies that the 51% was collected legitimately, yes, they have a union, and the company has to recognize the union.
What's the problem with the system as it stands now, as unions see it? Why are they so fiercely pushing for this change in the law?
Unions and some academics and many of unions, labor's friends on Capitol Hill, say the current system is very broken. And they say it's, you know, very imbalanced. Under current law and under current practice, you know, when unions start pushing for, to organize workers at a certain workplace, then management will kick in with an offensive to stop the union. And what often happens is managers, companies will, you know, show videos, have speeches, have large meetings telling workers how bad and evil and greedy unions are. They'll have one-on-one meetings with employees saying unions are bad, don't vote for the union. And meanwhile, union organizers are generally, you know, prohibited from setting foot on company property. When a worker who supports a union says something nice about a union during work time, he or she might get fired for not attending to his or her job. So unions say things are very, very out of balance now, that there are often these 1 or 2 month campaigns preceding the secret ballot election where management totally dominates the conversation, sometimes fires workers who support unions, sometimes threatens to move operations to Mexico or India if workers vote in a union. So my sense is, you know, the unions don't oppose the secret ballot election so much as they hate this 1 or 2 month campaign preceding the election, and they figure that by having card check, by letting workers unionize just by, you know, signing these cards and having a simple majority determine whether workers can join a union, they figured that's the fastest way, and that avoids this, you know, one-month or two-month propaganda campaign by the company.
Stephen, by your account and many others, everybody's pulling out all the stops on this. How do the sides see the stakes in this battle?
When I was in Washington just Tuesday, both sides, from business, from the Chamber of Commerce, from labor, from the AFL-CIO, from the SEIU, they both say this is the biggest lobbying campaign they've ever mounted, and they see this bill as crucial in determining the future of labor unions in the United States. I think organized labor sees it as pivotal to enabling unions to grow again after decades of decline. And I think management sees that unions are weak. Management likes that unions are weak, and they realize that if this bill passes, if this legislation passes, it really might bring about a renaissance, a rebirth of labor in the U.S.
What are the politics on the Hill? Both sides are expressing confidence that they're going to win here, but it reportedly boils down to just a few key votes in the Senate. What does it look like in the House, in the Senate? Where do things stand?
I think it will clearly pass in the House, as it did a few years ago. In the Senate, it really faces an uphill battle. The Republicans are fighting a tooth and nail. I think they will have the votes to mount a filibuster to prevent it from passing in the Senate. I know that Labor and Democrats say that they will somehow muster the 60 votes to overcome a filibuster, but with the Republicans, very solid on this and about five or eight Democratic senators wavering, right now, I don't see how the Democrats and Labor get to 60 on this.
And without 60, they can't do it.
Right. Without 60, they can't do it. I'm sure our guests from the AFL-CIO, who will be on in a few minutes, will tell us that they will be able to put together the 60. And maybe if President Obama really goes to bat all out for them, he'll be able to help them put together the 60. But right now, today, it doesn't look as if they'll be able to reach 60.
Stephen Greenhouse with the New York Times, stick with us for a second. Let's bring in the principals and ask them right here, right now, with us. From Washington is Bill Samuel, legislative director for the AFL-CIO. He's the top governmental affairs person for the nation's biggest labor organization. Obviously, it supports the card check bill now before Congress. Bill, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Also with us from Washington, Stephen Law, general counsel for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He was U.S. Deputy Secretary of Labor under President George W. Bush. The chamber opposes the new card check bill. Stephen Law, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Thomas. Great to be on point.
Yeah, of course. Bill Samuel, first to you. Our New York Times reporter says he's not sure you've got the votes. In fact, he thinks maybe you don't.
Well, I'd say don't count us out. There's an enormous campaign against this bill. The business community is not going to give up the power they've had almost unchallenged for three decades without a fight, and they're spending anywhere from $200 to $300 million. I'm sure Stephen Law will talk about their campaign, but there are hundreds of thousands of workers who are depending on this, and the system of collective bargaining, which we've enjoyed in this country for nearly a century, is really hanging in the balance. So I think we'll be able to convince 60 senators to allow the debate to go forward, and then I think we'll have a majority of the Senate to pass it, and we already know the president would sign it and strongly supports it.
Union membership in this country way down as recently as the 80s. It was 25% of American workers, now down around 7.6%. Maybe that answers the question right there, but let's hear it from you. Why are you fighting so hard for this legislation? Why does it matter?
Well, there are really two points. One, workers should have the ability to form unions without risking their job, without risking their livelihood. That was a promise made by the Congress in 1935. Unfortunately, the system is broken, as Steve Greenhouse has cataloged in his book and in a lot of very good reporting. It's nearly impossible for workers to surmount this incredible campaign that companies, really one-sided campaign that companies pursue to defeat workers who want to form a union. And the statistics are, I think, pretty clear now. And 75% of the cases, companies hire union busters, consultants and lawyers, to tell them how to defeat the union campaign. And a quarter of the cases, lead union organizers are fired, which obviously has an enormous impact on the strength that the campaign and the workers have going forward. So the system is just broken almost beyond repair. It's not something the National Labor Relations Board can do without a change in the law. And I think collective bargaining is worth saving. And collective bargaining is the way we built this middle class that ensures that prosperity is more broadly shared than it might otherwise be shared. And we're seeing the result of the decline of collective bargaining. Mm. The income gap, stagnation of wages. You know, you've reported on that before.
Mm. Stephen Law, Steve Greenhouse reports that you guys are warning of Armageddon at the Chamber of Commerce if this should go through, if card check becomes law. That bad? That big a problem?
Yeah, we're very concerned about it, and it's the reason why we have conducted probably the largest grassroots mobilization in the history of the chamber. And the reason why I think we're being successful and the reason why card check is running into significant problems on Capitol Hill is that people are starting to realize that this isn't just an issue of addressing particular abuses by balancing the playing field. This is about fundamentally changing the rules of the game. To make it cheap and easy for unions to organize and to provide a guaranteed outcome at the end of the collective bargaining process, all of which comes at the expense of both workers and employers.
Maybe it needs to be cheaper and easier to unionize. I mean, you look at what's happened to American, median age, working age household income in recent years, down. At the same time, you've seen those CEO salaries on Wall Street over the moon. Maybe things are out of balance, Stephen Law.
Well, one of the reasons why the current process for organizing does have expense associated with it is because both sides have to make their case to workers. And there is a secret ballot process that is set up fundamentally to protect the interests of workers, to protect them from intimidation both from unions and from employers. And there are documented cases of abuses on both sides. This is a system that has worked for 70 years to protect the rights of workers. And I think a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, both Democrats and Republicans, are finding it extremely unpalatable to consider stripping away that secret ballot protection that is fundamentally about protecting the workers, even as much as it is about employers or unions.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, a labor rally there last month on Capitol Hill. Union members calling for free choice. There's a huge battle on in Washington over how American workers unionize. Secret ballot or card check, unions want the option of ditching the ballot and just signing people up. Employers are digging in for a fight, and it is a big fight. We've got Stephen Law with us from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, general counsel there, fighting hard against the card check bill. Bill Samuel is here, legislative director of the AFL-CIO, fighting hard for it. Stephen Greenhouse, labor reporter for the New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze, joins us as well. Let's hear a couple of voices from Washington. In a video statement released at his website on Tuesday, Senate Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, of Kentucky, pushed back strongly against the card check bill. He said the idea of a secret ballot was sacred in America.
The attempt by some Democrats to take away this fundamental right goes against the ideals of political freedom upon which our nation was founded. Not only will this legislation invite harassment and intimidation into the workplace, it could also cost America even more jobs. At a time when we're trying to strengthen our economy and put people back to work, we should be making it easier, not harder, for jobs to expand.
Republican leader Mitch McConnell. President Obama has been supportive, though people are waiting to see how hard he pushes. Speaking last month as he announced a new task force on the middle class, Obama gave a voice to support for American unions in general.
I do not view the labor movement as part of the problem. To me, it's part of the solution. We need to level the playing field for workers and the unions that represent their interests, because we know that you cannot have a strong middle class without a strong labor movement.
President Obama last month. Bill Samuel, let's go right to this secret ballot issue. Mitch McConnell saying there basically the secret ballot is sacred in the United States, and why shouldn't we have it? I mean, I think that question will sit in people's minds, and it's certainly being encouraged by Stephen Law and others. I mean, give us the detail of why we shouldn't have a secret ballot, a vote behind a curtain.
Well, this really gets at one of the fundamental misconceptions about this bill, and I'm glad you raised it. The bill does not eliminate the choice that workers have, what to sign up either with authorization cards or to choose a secret ballot election. The problem
but you've made
is,
it clear you don't like secret ballots.
Well, for the last 30 years, the employers have had the choice to determine whether or not workers will organize through majority sign-up or secret ballot elections. Mm-hmm. But the key is these are not secret ballot elections like you and I generally understand them in the civic context. When Mitch McConnell runs for re-election against a Democrat, both sides get to tell their story. There's very little coercion. Neither side really has the ability to threaten or coerce. There's no issue about getting on somebody's property to tell your story. Both sides raise money. They're on the airwaves. They're sending mail and knocking on doors. This is very different. This is a one-sided campaign. It's nothing like political campaigns, and I think it's really disingenuous for Senator McConnell and the chamber to say we should preserve the secret ballot because elections are fundamental. These aren't elections as you and I understand them.
We'll get Stephen Law to respond to that, but Stephen Greenhouse, our reporter, I mean, you're supposed to be our independent third party here. How have you seen this work? Is there really unfair intimidation? Has American labor really been up against a stacked deck when it comes to organizing or not in your view?
In my view, I think if Mitch McConnell were a union organizer and trying to organize at a factory, at a plant, I think he would agree that things are skewed relatively against unions when unions try to, persuade workers to support a union. I mean, the company, as I write in my book, companies really control, dominate, almost monopolize the workers, and it's very hard for union organizers to get access to them. Companies don't always intimidate. Many times they don't intimidate, but they have ways to send out signals. In my book, I write about a company that put a truck outside with machinery on the flatbed saying, headed to Mexico. So the message to the workers was, hey, if we vote for a union, we might lose our jobs. They might go to Mexico.
Well, might they?
They might, yes. And management has a lot of power, much more than the unions do, to influence, to pressure workers how to vote. So I think many academic experts, will say that, this system, as it runs down in the United States, is, very tilted in favor of management. This one MIT study found that in 80% of the times that workers sign cards asking for an election, they end up with a union and a signed contract only 20% of the times when that happens. And I think that shows that even though, some polls show that more than, half of America's workers would vote for a union tomorrow if they could, it's very, very hard for them to get a union because things arguably are stacked against them. Mm. And I think the reason unions want majority sign-up is it's a surefire way, more surefire way for them to win. And I could understand, in a business's point of view, they feel that if this legislation is passed and unions can use majority sign-up most of the time, it will make it very, very hard for companies to get across their point of view about why workers should not join a union. And management doesn't want to be cut out. They love the way things operate now, where they can campaign for a month or two against a union before an election is held.
Stephen Law, I asked before, but I didn't quite hear an answer, and I still wonder if, I know employers are opposed to this, but doesn't the fact that American household working wages have stagnated, even fallen back, give management something to answer for here? I mean, doesn't it indicate some kind of problem? Maybe this would help it.
Well, there are a lot of complex reasons why we're in the economic situation we're in, and there are a lot of good solutions that need to be pursued to rectify that. But it just doesn't stand to reason that the solution we should pursue is to strip workers of a fundamental protection of a secret ballot in union organizing elections.
But there's another kind of protection, which is the union itself, which gives them more weight in contract negotiations. I mean, might that not get the balance back in these conversations and maybe be part of bringing their wages back up? I'm looking here at a big a whole lot of economists who have signed on to just that notion, saying, you've got to have it to restore balance in the labor market. What do you say to that?
Well, I think there are a lot of different ways that workers can assert their rights. Sometimes they do it as part of a union, and they can choose to do it as part of a union. But again, to disenfranchise workers as a means of expanding union power just simply doesn't connect. And it's not just the view of the U.S. chamber. An increasing number of both Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill are saying, even if we value unions and even if we feel that unions have an important and legitimate role to play in the U.S. economy, and I believe that personally myself, it's one thing to further balance the playing field with the changes that address specific abuses that may be present in the current system. It's an entirely different thing to completely rewrite the rules of the game, to take away a basic protection that workers currently enjoy, to take away a system that is at least designed to ensure a full discussion on both sides, to allow both management and labor to present their cases, and to protect workers from coercion, to strip all that away and instead create a system where people can be directly confronted about whether they're going to join a union or not and suffer the consequences if they say no. That is a terrible disservice to the American worker.
Stephen Law, Bill Samuel, Stephen Greenhouse, let's hear from our listeners, a lot of them with opinions on this subject. In Somerville, South Carolina, Sonny is calling. Hi, Sonny, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. How you doing? I don't know. I've been working on shipping industry for the last 12 years.
Okay.
And I work with ILA labor every single day. And all I got to say is they are union, and they have a pretty good life. They make a good wages. They have a steady job. They have a safe job, secure job. So I don't see nothing wrong with the unionizing. We've been trying to unionize for 12 years now, and we've been fighting it for 12 years, and we're losing this battle.
Do you think card check would be good for you, or do you want to have a secret ballot? Does it matter to you?
No, the secret ballot is not working right now because last year we had 8 people get fired in Los Angeles with my company, which I'm not going to make, who actually went and had a secret meeting and signed the ballots, but management found out next morning they were fired. So the system is not working right now. The system is broken, obviously, especially when in my business the labor cost is less than 10% of the whole business. So it does not make sense. To me, I'm a middle management. I would love for that to go through because that would mean that my salary would increase more than it is right now, because if people were on it, making more money, I would make more money too. So,
Sonny, we got the view, and we got a lot of people lined up here. Let me get one more from Linda. Thank you for calling, Sonny. Linda in Calabash, North Carolina. You're on the air, Linda. Hi.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, what do you know?
Yes, I am totally for unions. I was a union worker for over 25 years, and I was able to make a living. I had health care to raise my daughter. I had paid job training. We were proud of the work that we did.
Good for you. What's wrong with the secret ballot to make that happen?
I am retired. I just believe that anyone should be allowed to join a union who wishes to. It's too much greed at the top. I mean, it's embarrassing, some of these wages that the CEOs and upper management gets. I mean, it's a shame. It's pitiful. And I just feel like that I'm not that familiar with the issue. I know you mentioned Mitch McConnell from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I am in North Carolina now,
mm-hmm.
which is a right-to-work state,
mm-hmm.
I found out. And I am from Kentucky. So as far as Mr. McConnell, I believe that he is doing is totally wrong.
But the union worked for you. Linda, we've got it. Let me get one more here. Thanks, Linda. Let me get one from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And Jonathan. Jonathan, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Hi. Well, I guess my perspective is just a moment of background. I was born and raised in the Twin Cities. I'm 36 now. So at that time, pardon me, the union was very, very strong in multiple aspects. My father was a 37-year Teamster.
Okay.
I ended up opening up the St. Paul Whole Foods Market, which, of course, is a national grocer that's non-union. The union there, the grocers union, actually picketed our store when we opened for about 18 months on a quote-unquote informational picket. But, of course, as people were driving by in Highland Park, what they were seeing were physical people standing out there holding up their boards, and they took it for something else.
So should we make it easier to unionize or not, Jonathan? Should we have card check or not?
I don't think we need to make it any easier, honestly. If you have an existing employee that already has health benefits, for instance, what is going to be the end of the day measurable, tangible benefit of the union coming in? Are they going to be able to increase my wages $4 or $5 an hour? What's going to be the benefit to me to offset the union dues?
We'll pick up the question, Jonathan. Thanks very much for your call. Stephen Greenhouse, on that question, is it clear that union workers end up with a better deal? Is it clear when you, you know, when you calculate in everything, including the trouble we're seeing in Detroit these days?
Yes. I mean, academic studies, I'm sure businesses would acknowledge that unions help provide better wages and better benefits to workers. And if that weren't the case, I suspect business would not be fighting this so hard. On the other hand, you know, business will argue that sometimes unions do such a good job in increasing wages and benefits that they make companies uncompetitive, and they cite Detroit. I think a lot of this debate, Tom, comes down to, you know, six or eight moderate Democrats in the Senate. And if they all back the bill, then it will probably pass in the Senate. But a lot of them are wavering. And I think they agree with those who argue that, you know, unions need to find an easier way to unionize. A lot of workers want unions but can't get them. But a lot of these folks also sympathize with the Chambers and Steve Law's view that, well, you know, the secret ballot is sacrosanct, and we have to find a way to make it easier to unionize while somehow, you know, keeping the secret ballot in most or even all unionization drives.
Bill Samuel, you're the legislative director for the AFL-CIO. Give us your analysis here. Why don't you have the Democratic Senate members all signed up, lockstep, ready to go? What are the pressures or attitudes, opinions that are giving you some headwind there?
Well, obviously, in our politics, business has an enormous amount of clout, and they're spending a lot of money. But I want to get back to this basic point that the bill does not eliminate the secret ballot. In fact, for the whole history of the National Labor Relations Act, workers have had the ability to join unions through majority sign-up or card check, as you referred to it. The problem is it's up to the employer now to decide whether or not to acknowledge those cards and acknowledge that a majority exists and begin bargaining. We don't do away with the secret ballot. It's never been required.
But you put it in the union, in the employees' hands rather than the employer's hands. And
exactly.
The implication is that you would expect employees to use this and use it a fair amount. I mean,
well,
otherwise, you could do what you're doing now.
Given the unfairness of the company-dominated campaign process, many workers would choose this. They don't all choose it. But the fact is, why should it be up to the boss to decide how the workers express their majority support for the union? Many companies, Singular Wireless, Harley-Davidson, Kaiser Permanente, Freightliner, big corporations voluntarily recognize unions based on card check, and they've been doing it for decades. About 500,000 workers have joined unions since the year 2000 through card check. This is not a radical departure from current law. We're simply putting back in the hands of workers the power to decide how and whether to form a union. This notion that we're doing away with some, you know, democratic, traditional, fundamental right is just absurd, and the business community needs to, I think, fess up to this.
Stephen Law says it'll end up card check, and workers will be intimidated into signing up for union, whether they really want to or not. What do you say, Bill?
Well, there's no evidence of that. As I said, Singular Wireless, 40,000 workers for that company signed up to join the union without an election. There's no evidence. There's no anecdotal evidence even that workers were intimidated or coerced to sign cards. The intimidation almost entirely comes from the other direction, from companies that don't want to see unions in their business, and there's a 75-year history of that.
Stephen Law, how about it? 75 years of intimidation, unions down to 7-point-something% of the American workforce. Maybe it is time for a change.
Well, first of all, I think any perspective that takes the view that one side is as pure as the driven snow and the other side is completely on the wrong side of things is almost certainly incorrect, no matter which perspective you take. There is evidence, there's been evidence offered in congressional testimony of union intimidation and organizing drives, as well as employer intimidation in the same kinds of settings. But there's a certain mythology that workers just kind of spontaneously decide to organize, and the truth of the matter is that organizing is conducted, controlled, and led by union organizers. They're very professional people. They understand the law very well. In certain instances, they find workers who are very open to that organizing effort because the employer hasn't done a good job of treating the employees well. But it is the organizer who really sets the terms and decides how the organizing is going to be done. And the reason why card check is very attractive to unions is because it is very inexpensive, it's very cheap, and it allows that organizer to stand over the worker and force them to say yes or no in front of them about whether they're going to be a free union or not. And
we've
got
to take a short break right here. We'll come back. Stephen Law, Bill Samuel, Stephen Greenhouse, we're talking about card check in American unions. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the huge battle on now in Washington over how American workers unionize. Secret ballot or card check? Unions want the option of ditching the ballot and just signing people up. Employers are digging in for a fight, and it is a big fight. Bill Samuel is here from the AFL-CIO, legislative director there. Stephen Law is here, general counsel for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They're fighting card check tooth and nail in Washington. Stephen Greenhouse is with us from the New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker, just out in paperback. He says right now the anti-card check, anti-change forces look like they're winning, but it's not over yet. Let's hear from you, Linda, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You're on the air.
Yes, hi there. I think this is a wonderful opportunity to ask our friend from the chamber, since he's concerned about fair elections, what he would propose in substitution for the card check law, because the labor board in Washington has been dominated by employers for nearly 25 years. These rules and decisions that are in place now that unions feel are unfair are essentially representing employers' points of view. If he's really worried about it, perhaps he can give us another alternative.
Stephen Law, do you see the need for some kind of change or not?
I would say two things about that. First of all, we have now in the White House someone who I think will go down in history probably as the most pro-union president in our history. And he's made appointments to the National Labor Relations Board and to the Department of Labor, people who are very smart and capable and sympathetic to the labor movement. And so I think the view that somehow the playing field has been tilted against unions is going to change dramatically over the next couple of years as the president and his administration use the rules of the game to help labor as much as they possibly can. I really agree with something that Steve Greenhouse said earlier, which is that in a lot of ways, organized labor is poised to make a lot of changes that will change the rules of the game and make it more possible for them to organize. Certainly the political climate, the members of Congress and the White House are a lot more susceptible to that, but not this bill. I think what they're discovering is this is becoming a bridge too far. And the more they spend all their bullets on this issue, I think it will frustrate their ability to make other changes that we may or may not agree with as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, but would certainly advance their agenda.
Linda, what do you say?
I find that an unsatisfactory answer, because leaving the rights of workers to the vagaries of elections from cycle to cycle rather than installing them into legislation seems to me to be exactly the reason why we've had 25 years of union decline. If you take a look at the difference between public sector unionization and private, the entire difference in the rate is due to the state laws that permit union elections in states for public employees that are very different than the private sector under the federal law.
Bill Samuel, jump in here from the AFL-CIO. Do you see the field having been tilted against labor in this country? And do you see Obama turning it around? Do you see him weighing in heavy on this issue?
Well, I think he will. You played the tape of his speech at the White House last month, where he talked about unions being essential to the stability and growth of the middle class. You know, in the post-war period, we had the longest period of economic growth, and everybody benefited, especially workers at the bottom. And that was because we were engaged in collective bargaining across the board. It was considered not only acceptable but expected. In fact, the original National Labor Relations Act encourages companies to engage in collective bargaining. Stephen Law suggested it's really a contest between workers and companies. They both should have a say. But in fact, he suggests that there's this natural conflict and companies should have the right to campaign against unions and try to convince workers not to form unions. And the fact is that that doesn't help our economy. When workers have the ability to bargain collectively, they have the chance of getting some of the benefits of the productivity and profits they're helping to create, and they've lost that since the 1970s. It used to be that profits, productivity, and wages went up together, and that link was broken. And you know, around 1980, the Reagan Revolution, we decided to unleash Wall Street and the titans of industry, and you know what? They all got rich, and everybody else stayed where they were or dropped back. And that's because we've seen really almost the end of collective bargaining in this country, which is not being has not been the experience almost in any other industrialized country in the world.
Stephen Greenhouse, how about President Obama? He had a lot of support from unions in his campaign. We heard him on tape there speaking, you know, fulsome praise for the influence of labor unions in the American economy. Do you see him coming in heavy on this card check issue, potentially swinging the vote toward labor?
I see him coming in moderately heavy, not super heavy, Tom. I think he firmly wants a bill passed that would make it easier for workers to unionize. Whether he'll, you know, go to the mat over, you know, the exact language that exists now is unclear. He might push for a compromise. What is clear, though, is, you know, President Obama sees that the middle class has been struggling. And I think that's one of the reasons he set up this task force on the middle class. And I think he agrees with those who argue that one of the reasons the middle class is having such a hard time is that, you know, unions have grown weaker. You know, look at the segment you just aired from the president a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, economic studies show that weaker unions might account for, you know, 30% of the reason, 30% of the factors why there's been so much wage stagnation in the past 10, 20, 30 years. So I think President Obama wants legislation that will make it harder for unionize. You know, I think he'll push for this legislation. I think he might see at some point that maybe it's too hard to line up, you know, all the Democrats behind this. Then he might push for some compromise that would still make it easier for workers to unionize.
What kind of compromise? Where's the wiggle room here? Stephen Law is quoted saying there is no compromise. Is there potentially room, and what might that look like, Stephen? Greenhouse. Let's stick with Greenhouse for a second. So many Steves today. Stephen Greenhouse.
Yeah. Some people are talking about a Canadian model as a possible compromise. And in Canada, in several of the provinces of Canada, they have elections, but, you know, once workers sign cards requesting an election, then the election is held within 3 to 5 days, rather than dragging out a campaign for 2 months. And I think a lot of people, union advocates, would say that the Canadian system is better than the American system because it doesn't give management a month or two to run these intensive campaigns. So I think, you know, one fallback position, maybe Plan B, would be this Canadian model that once workers, you know, voice support for a union, then they'd hold a quick election within 3 to 5 or 10 days without, you know, management really being able to pressure workers too much.
Bill Samuel, room for compromise here, or are you going for the whole enchilada?
Well, we're going for the whole bill because I think it's a pretty straightforward piece of legislation that people understand. You know, there's going to be a process in the Senate where this will be debated, and there'll be a markup in the Labor Committee, and then it'll be on the floor. So no doubt it will undergo some changes. We expect it to stay relatively faithful to the basic premise that workers should have the right to choose and not their employer as to how they form a union. Quick elections are certainly better. The problem is we're still saying that the employer should have the right to demand an election when the workers don't necessarily want one. And even whether it's 3 days or 5 days, the employer can still sort of shut down operations for a day, gather up all the employees for a three-hour meeting, and make it very clear that they want them to vote no, and that they don't, there are going to be severe consequences. So I'm not sure preserving the election at the employer's discretion is necessarily a good thing.
Bill, Tom Harkin, senator from Iowa, Democrat, of course, a big sponsor of this bill. Under George W. Bush, he had 46 co-sponsors in the Senate. Under Barack Obama, with more Democrats on Capitol Hill, he only has 40 co-sponsors. What's going on there, Bill?
Well, I think it's a tribute to Steve's good work at the chamber. I mean, they have ramped up an enormous campaign against this bill. And frankly, it's not really against the bill. It's against unions. I mean, we really ought to strip aside the rhetoric. They don't want more unions and more workers covered by collective bargaining. You know, using words like Armageddon and Gestapo tactics. Lee Scott, the chairman of Walmart, said, we like driving the car and we're not going to give the steering wheel to anybody but us. Bernie Marcus from Home Depot said it's the demise of civilization. I mean, they're running a very over-the-top aggressive campaign. They're spending a lot of money on it with a lot of deceptive ads about the elimination of the secret ballot, and that's having an impact. People don't want to get in the middle of this fight right now.
Let's hear from working folks. Maybeth in Waterbury, Connecticut. You're on the air, Maybeth.
Oh, hi to everybody, and thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just have a quick comment, and I'll take your response off the air.
Okay.
Ten years ago, I was working at a hospital, and I worked there for about 12 years. And every time there was talk of possibly getting a union, you would start hearing comments trickling down saying, if anybody approaches you outside the hospital, you're not to talk to anybody. And right away you would start hearing, we don't need a union here. You know, we get good wages, we get good benefits. It's not necessary. And they would say, definitely don't talk to anybody. If you get caught talking to anybody, you'll get in trouble. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maybeth. So you felt the kind of, felt like intimidation there a bit, I guess. Let's get another from Amherst, Massachusetts. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want two anecdotes from my past. I used to work for a non-union electrician out near Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And one morning, I was working on the roof of a factory. I was walking up a staircase with a bundle of 10 sticks of electrical pipe, very light, you know, maybe 30 pounds of pipe.
Okay.
And this gentleman accosted me and gave me a whole bunch of guff for doing that. And I said, what? I didn't understand. And he was like, don't you understand that the union rule is that you're only allowed to carry one stick of pipe at a time? And I was like, you're kidding me. I'm supposed to spend the whole morning walking up and down these steps with one piece of pipe?
Right.
And he said, yeah, that's how it works. And I was young, and we didn't work for a union. We were sort of sneaking in there. And
what do you take away from that, Sean? What's your takeaway?
I think abuse comes from both sides, and I think that element, you know, you can't be competitive in the world if that's the way you run business. And so I was, you know, that sort of colored my view of unions. And also, I was foolish and young at the time, so I just laughed at the guy, told him he was an idiot, and walked up the stairs. And for the rest of that whole job, we were relentlessly harassed. And then another incident, the gentleman said there was no anecdotal evidence of intimidation from both sides, and that's not true. I was nearly killed. I was hung up on 277 volts on a circuit that I had taped off, tagged off, and it was turned on intentionally by someone who was upset because we had a secret union vote. We had a union vote. It went against the union. And we were on a largely union job, and
yep.
We were complete. You know, I was nearly killed. Our site van was trashed. Our site trailer was trashed. You know, there's
so you felt intimidated, harassed from the other side, from the union side.
Definitely, definitely, and a lot of people do. I mean, anyone who says that the intimidation only comes from one side, I'm not saying that the companies don't do the same thing. The woman you just talked to, I mean, when we went through that union vote, all the same things happened with us. They were like, oh, don't talk to anybody. That,
right.
That.
Sean, that's a great frontline report. It's a big, rough world out there from a lot of angles. We'll pick it up, but let me get one more here before we do. Savannah, Georgia. Sonny, you're on the air.
Hello there, Tom. Thanks for my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm leaning on what the lady said, and it's true that my daughter tried to organize in Home Depot in New Jersey and was ousted right out of there in the job. And Walmart, who owns Sam's Club, when we had our first orientation as new employees there, two managers had to come in to be proof that this video was shown and stated that you don't really need a union. This is before there was even thoughts of a union. You don't need a union to pay for the dues and the extra things. We will take well care of you. So it was intimidation before things were even thought about, and not that they have been. But it's like strongly anti-union, two big corporations, Walmart owning Sam's, and two, certainly Home Depot.
Yeah. Sonny, thanks for that report. Bill Samuel, I'm sure you've thought a lot about those big retail stores. A lot of their labor relations have been very much in the news. On the other hand, here's Sean, our electrician, who says he's got concerns about American productivity, if there's too much union influence, and he felt harassed from the union side.
Well, his story is pretty frightening, and I'm sure there are examples of that, and there's no excuse for them, and certainly no one in the labor movement, at least where I work, the AFL-CIO, condones anything like that. But I would imagine it's very rare. And when you compare that to the experience of ordinary workers trying to form unions every day, the 29,000 cases a year where the board finds that there's been some illegal intimidation, coercion, or violations of workers' rights, on the company side, it's about 12 to 1 in terms of ratios where unions may engage in some violations of the National Labor Relations Act. So it's really not comparable, and I don't think we should equate coercion that may occur during an organizing drive from a union organizer or a coworker and the employer. They're not comparable at all.
Stephen Law, what about a little compromise here? Bill Samuels may not be ready to do it. Might you be?
Well, earlier when I said that there is no compromise, I was really quoting word for word Anna Berger, who is the senior director of Change to Win, which is the breakaway coalition of unions. I think, as Bill himself said, and I don't blame him for doing so, they see themselves within striking distance of trying to get this bill passed, and they don't see any reason to give up any of it. My own view is that I think that labor has already lost the secret ballot issue. I think people look at that, and again, it's not conservative Republicans, it's moderate Democrats as well, and see that as simply a bridge too far. Just the other day, a major labor leader, not part of Bill Samuel's group,
yep,
said, since when was the secret ballot a central tenet of democracy? And you could argue that secret ballots aren't a central tenet of democracy, but I think it shows that on this particular part of the issue, at least a part of the labor movement has really become tone deaf.
What about a fairer distribution of the fruits of this country's output? How do we get that if there's not more union representation, Stephen?
Well, union representation could be one of the mechanisms by which workers are able to get additional economic benefits. It's not always a win-win. If you look at states with higher union density, they tend to also be states that have a higher cost of living, higher taxes, and higher unemployment. And if you compare, for example, union pension funds with pension funds that are offered by companies, the company-managed pension plans tend to be in much better financial shape. So it's not an absolute correlation. To the extent that we think that higher unionization could help workers, there are going to be ways that the playing field could be balanced that certainly President Obama is going to be intent on doing that doesn't require a complete rewriting of the rules of the game.
Stephen Greenhouse, what's the calendar here? Where does the rubber meet the voting road?
They're saying end of April, May, June. It will come up in the Senate. I think House members want it to come up in the Senate first to see whether there are 60 votes in the Senate to overcome a filibuster. Then the House members would be willing to stick out their neck.
So the heat is on right now. Stephen Greenhouse with the New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze. Great to have you as always. Thank you for joining us. Bill Samuel with the AFL-CIO, Stephen Law with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Thanks to you all. Really great to hear you out. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.